Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:05 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 9th, and we had a big move today in the currency markets. You can see the euro is up over a cent, but more importantly than that, it has completely countermanded the big downward dynamic that we saw from the upper side of the underlying range, or what is now an underlying range, at the beginning of the year. It's at a new almost three-month high. And it's testing the region of the trend mean. Well, what has driven this outperformance here? There's been a lot of people talking about the potential for the dollar to deteriorate sharply in 2019. They made a similar argument at the beginning of last year. So what's different on this occasion? Well, the market is very quickly pricing out the potential for additional rate hikes. In fact, it's already been done. The market now concludes there won't be a rate hike in 2019. There may even be rate cuts in 2020. So that's certainly where we are right now. Now, that pretty much then starts to take out the potential that there's going to be a continued widening in the interest rate differential between the US and Europe. Well, that's before we begin to talk about Europe moving towards additional fiscal stimulus, which looks increasingly likely. There's a strong likelihood, I think, that Germany is going to move into at least a technical recession where they have two consecutive quarters of negative growth. The Italian economy is already in recession. France, its PMI figures are deteriorating rather sharply, suggesting that there is the threat of contraction there. And that's all against a background where the ECB has ended its quantitative easing program. It is unlikely to engage in quantitative easing again so soon after ending the last program. But we do have the prospect of a political solution, which would be fiscal stimulus. Europe needs fiscal stimulus. They have been engaged in austerity now for the better part of 8 years, and this has contributed to the rise of populism. You can't simply expect people to accept progressively lower standards of living indefinitely without any form of compensation, and that is exactly what has been expected of people in Europe as a result of this fiscal austerity drive, and we're rapidly approaching the end of it. In fact, there was a tweet, or at least it was a very short TikTok headline that shot past to the screen on Sunday night saying that Jean-Claude Juncker was saying that the EU is preparing a social security system. Well, anyone who thought that Europe isn't heading towards a federal state, or that that isn't the clear objective of the European Union, well, that should put to rest any doubts about the intentions of the Eurozone to become a federal state. That's completely at odds with what the vast majority of people in Europe actually want, but that's kind of beside the point. Well, when we look at the euro, it's right in the region of the trend mean now. On each of the occasions that it has come up to this, at least in the last 7 or 8 months, it's failed. So this is the do-or-die moment. Either this breakout from the short-term range is going to be sustained, or it's going to fail and push back into that underlying range. And if it does that, well, I think there's a strong likelihood it's going to move on to new lows. But there is a gathering consensus that the dollar is a little bit overbought in here, and that there are legitimate reasons for why it should be starting to weaken. I think chief among those are the interest rate outlook, but then of course you have the volatility on the stock markets and the fact that people are starting to conclude that the US exceptionalism that prevailed for all of 2017 and 18 may be coming to an end. Well, when we look at it in those terms, there are a number of asset classes that should be doing better, and I think if we are going to get a weaker dollar, then we should start to identify what those potentially are. So the Philippine peso has been trending down in a reasonably consistent manner for 5 years, and it is now testing its sequence of higher reaction lows. Well, we can see that this is a very good example of the dollar finding support in the region of the trend mean rather than exactly at the trend mean. We can consider the trend mean as a trend smoothing device, and therefore it's quite normal that you're going to get overshoots. So that's what we've seen ample evidence of with the dollar in 2014, in 2015, in 2016, and then again at the beginning of 2018. And now it is also trading back below the trend mean. Well, this is where, if the dollar is going to exhibit relative strength again, it will bounce. If it fails and sustains a move below 52, well, then we will really begin to start to think about a break in this medium-term trend. Well, it's also worth considering that the Philippine peso has unwound just about all of the advance put in from its lows back in 2002 and 2003. So this is back in an area where we've seen important support coming through previously. And when we look at the Philippine Composite Index, it's back above the trend mean, and it has confirmed support in the region of 7,000, and it's broken the year-long sequence of lower rally highs, whereas it has held the sequence of higher major reaction lows evidenced since 2013. So this is a potentially bullish environment. What I find particularly interesting too about the emerging markets is that there is nobody talking about a secular bull market in the emerging markets. That's rather positive. One of the things that has been I've been most I think cautious about is when I've been giving talks and been sitting on panel discussions over the course of the last decade, I generally felt comfortable to be the only bull. Well, that changed about a year ago, where I was sitting on some discussions, and then I was surrounded by bulls. Well, that generally tells us that we're in a crowded trade. Well, right now, emerging markets are not a crowded trade. There are people relying, or I think regarding them as a trading opportunity, and I think it's perhaps more than that. If we do see the dollar weakening, then that could be the catalyst to see fund flows back into the emerging market sector. That's equally the case for Indonesia, and the index there is back above its trend mean. And when we look at Thailand, then it is bouncing. Well, it hasn't bounced an awful lot just yet, but it has at least steadied, and it needs to push back above the trend mean to really confirm support in the region of the upper side of that underlying 4-year range. When we look at what's going on in Malaysia, well, there is the potential at least that the low around the $1,600, or excuse me, point area will hold. Well, then, when we look at India, there is an election coming up, and they've got a new central banker, and he has basically been instructed to buy the election for the BJP. So that's fiscal stimulus writ large, and it is fiscal stimulus is the buzzword right now. When we think about where fiscal stimulus is evident, it's evident already and has been for and has been well priced in and then priced out of the U.S. market, the U.K., France, Italy, India have all adopted fiscal stimulus. Now, the big question is, where is the next source of fiscal stimulus going to come from? Well, it's potentially going to be Germany, or the rest of the EU, China, and Brazil. So those are the areas that we need to pay particular attention to because they're not priced into the market just yet. And when we look at the Indian rupee, well, it was in mildly negative territory in here today, but this is a natural area where we could anticipate at least some moderation in terms of the rebound, considering it's testing both the previous lows for the rupee and also the region of the trend mean. And fiscal stimulus, generally speaking, is not particularly positive for the respective currencies. Well, the other big point for emerging markets is the oil price, and oil is rallying here. So That is both a headwind and a tailwind for emerging markets. The strength of the dollar has been an inhibiting factor, but it also helped to contain the inflation in energy prices. Any kind of dollar weakness is beneficial for commodity prices. Well, now we've seen that this rally in Brent crude is substantially larger than any we've seen since at least October. It is clearly an unwinding of the short-term oversold condition, and there is the strong likelihood that this low that we've seen over the last 3 weeks is medium-term in nature. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to see prices shoot right back up to $80 and surmount that level. I think that that's quite unlikely, but we are likely to see an additional rally to close the overextension. Then we're probably going to move into a much more volatile environment. The reasonably consistent trending environment that prevailed from the middle of 2017 to the third quarter of 2018 is over, and we're going to be in a much, well, I suspect at least, we're going to be in a much more choppy environment for the oil price going forward. Now, when we look at natural gas, it has given up the entire advance from basically $3 up to almost $5 and straight back down again. Generally speaking, when we see these kinds of triangular patterns evolving, whether they happen over the short term, as was the case with natural gas, or the medium term, we have a very good example of that happening, for example, with Baidu a few years ago, where there was a very clear triangular pattern that gave way to an explosive breakout on the upside in that case. Well, what I find interesting about some of these Chinese companies is that they sold off for just about all of 2018, and now they're starting to exhibit some relative strength. Baidu has at least steadied in the region of 150. Alibaba is also steadying in here, and it was up in a reasonably dynamic manner in here this week. Well, of course, they need to do more than that. They need to push back above their respective trend means. They need to put in higher reaction lows to confirm that people are willing to pay more on the pullback, that they're not, that the particular focus on a higher reaction low is quite simple. People like to buy the dips. And when you have something that's pulling back, if you get a higher reaction low, it tells us that people are impatient, that they're not willing to wait for it to go down to a new low because they're worried about missing out on the opportunity. So that fear of missing out contributes to higher reaction lows, and it's a very clear bullish signal. Well, we haven't seen it quite yet, and the sequence of lower rally highs remains in place. So there's certainly potential for an additional unwinding of oversold conditions. But perhaps one of the biggest decliners of last year, Tencent, is firming in here, that it has now broken its downtrend. It has put in the higher reaction lows. It is firming from around this $300 area, and it is unwinding its overextension relative to the trend mean. This is clearly different trading activity than we'd seen for all of 2018. So that is at least a straw in the wind to suggest that some demand dominance is returning to the Chinese market. But it's, I think, relatively isolated so far. Now, the A-share index was in positive territory in here today, and the pace of the decline has moderated, but it needs to do better than it's already been doing. It needs to push back above that 2800 point level. So far, China has made a good game of talking about the market and talking about cutting taxes and additional fiscally stimulative measures, but it hasn't done them yet. And I think the clear conclusion about bull markets in China is that they do tend to be state-sponsored. So if they tend to be state-sponsored, well, then we need to see some sponsorship. And until we get that, well, the chances are that we're going to see some isolated instances of demand returning to dominance, but not quite yet until I think it would be the conclusion with the wider mainland market. Now, there's the big question of the renminbi. There has been some discussion about whether there could be a Shanghai Accord in the works, which would, I think, contribute to additional renminbi strength in return for an acceptance of a trade pact. Well, China doesn't particularly want to have a strong currency, but neither do they want to see it in a rout. And the prospect of additional dollar weakness is potentially something that could help to steady up the Chinese markets. The very quick depreciation that we saw at the beginning of the trade war could potentially be unwound if we see that the trade war ends with an amicable, or at least a temporary amicable, solution. So the renminbi is now unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. So we're coming to a point where we could potentially see some resistance coming through, and if it can push through that 6.77 level, then we could start to talk about medium-term top formation completion for the US dollar. So that is particularly, I think, relevant against the current market background. Well, if we then focus on what's been going on Wall Street, the S&P 500 has extended its advance in here today, but I think anybody can see there are two important points here. The first is the pace of the advance is slowing down, and it is coming back towards that first area of potential resistance around the lower side of the overhead trading range. This is a somewhat a larger rally than we saw in November, but not a lot bigger. And what we're really going to have to see is a higher reaction low. I think I'd be very cautious about concluding that this is a meaningful higher reaction low posted on the third. One day on the downside is not an awful lot. So we need to see the first consolidation and support being found above the low posted on the 26th, and then the price pushing on and through that 2600 point level. If we get that, then we would have very clear evidence that the lows are a medium-term low is in, or something, or at least we would have some evidence on the chart to demonstrate that. So far, we're still in a downtrend, and we're at the first area of potential resistance, so it really wouldn't be at all surprising if we get some weakness coming through over the course of the next couple of days. That's particularly true of some of the largest shares, most notably Amazon. Amazon rallied incredibly impressively over the course of the last 3 weeks, and it has now unwound all of its overextension, or at least all of its oversold condition, and has developed a short-term overbought condition. It's also right in the region of this $1,700 area. There has been a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs since September, and we have a short-term overbought condition. If we look at that on a stochastic index, it gives us exactly the same information, and the price is starting to fall back through the slow-moving stochastic. That really does suggest that we have seen the best of this rally and that we're due some consolidation. If we get a higher reaction low on Amazon, then the buy the dip crowd of people who have been conditioned over the course of what has been an incredibly impressive advance over the last decade will be vindicated, or at least they'll feel vindicated. But considering the extent to which the price has pulled back, then it wouldn't be at all surprising if we see a lengthy period of ranging to rebuild support for the share. And I think that is perhaps the best case scenario. And I think when we look at it on a logarithmic scale and do that over the course of the last decade, we would then perhaps get a better influence, or I think a better perspective on the way that unleveraged investors have been approaching the share, because percentage declines of this magnitude previously have been buying opportunities. So that has been the I think the primary rationale behind buying the dip on Amazon. And eventually buying the dip will not work. That was one of the primary points that Jeff Gundlach was making in his Just Markets presentation yesterday. I tuned into it. I've requested the slides, and when I receive them, I'll post them on the site. But what he was, I think, most particularly focusing on was the potential for the dollar to deteriorate, the potential for the emerging markets to do better, for some of the really big overvaluations that we've seen particularly evolve in the highly leveraged investment grade sector become undone. He thinks that it is highly unlikely that the contraction we've seen recently in high yield spreads is going to persist. In fact, if we look at the chart, and one thing that I am particularly aware of when I listen to Jeff Gundlach is that he is a technical analyst. There's no question of that. Well, when we look at the chart, it's quite clear that on occasions when the high yield spread has broken out, it doesn't simply go straight back down again. That it tends to stay high for a while, and on previous occasions, like 2011 and 2015-16, it moved substantially higher before it started to come back down again. Well, what that suggests to me is that we're not quite yet at the end of this corrective phase. That certainly we've had a rebound, but now the big question is how much of this rebound we can hold in a pullback scenario. So I think that is probably going to get answered over the course of the next few weeks. Now, if the dollar does continue to deteriorate, and again, that is going to be a big question, then gold prices are looking really quite favorable in here, and they're pushing through to test the $1,300 area. But I think that's not particularly an historic area of either support or resistance. It's the upper side of the range looks quite likely to be tested, and that's a lot closer to $1,400. And this looks like a very lengthy period of right-hand extension following the Type 2 bottom. So I think that really is what the chart is telling us. Then when we look at gold miners, well, they're back above the trend mean. They've bounced from the region of the late 2016 low, and this also looks like a market that can do better from here. And the precious metals sector is generally underowned. When we look at, for example, silver prices, that until really quite recently they were ranging below $15. They're currently around $15.80, but the peak was at $50. And the prices that we saw recently were approximating the lows we saw back in 2015 and early 2016. So this is not an overowned sector. In fact, the attitude among investors has been at best apathetic and at worst dismissive. So when we think about where the opportunities lie, it's generally speaking in the asset classes that people don't have big positions in already. So that's, I think, particularly interesting against a background where the dollar could weaken. And the continuous commodity index is bouncing from the region of the lower side of its range. That is reflecting both oil, but also the return to performance of the precious metals. When we look at just the industrial resources, then we're getting a slightly different picture. But here we also have a short-term oversold condition, and there's the potential for that to begin to be unwound. And then when we look at, for example, some of the soft commodities, well, sugar prices are starting to rally, and they have been doing better, and not least because of the return of speculative interest in the oil price. Soybeans remain largely range-bound over the medium term, but are now back above the trend mean. And feeder cattle, which had been rather out in the wilderness for the last year, have started to steady from this 140 area. When we look at iron ore, and I don't have the, let's see, if we just look at the contract, I don't know how much back history we have for the iron ore contract, but what is starting to become apparent is that, and unfortunately that only goes back to the end of 2016 or 2017. Certainly I've seen charts where the iron ore contract has been doing better. It's a lot easier to find it in the chart library than it is on Bloomberg. Well, one thing that iron ore tells us about is that when China is starting to stimulate, then it's generally in response to a slowing domestic economy. When we look at the iron ore price, let me see if I can drag this page over, or maybe just type it into Bloomberg. There we go. Well, iron ore prices are well off their lows, but they're still very much within this range that's been persisting for nearly 3 years. So I think that there is the potential for commodities to start to do better. There's the potential for emerging markets to do better. But again, that's also against a background where we have continued uncertainty among the more higher valued or highly valued shares, and that there is potential for mean reversion in terms of those earnings. The big challenge for this year is really in the bond markets. And when we look at, for example, the performance of the high yield ETF, it's now just about unwound all of its oversold condition, so it's at the first area of potential resistance. I think that is the abiding characteristic we have in the markets right now. We've unwound the short-term oversold conditions, and now we need to see demand returning at progressively higher levels to conclude that the lows are in. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.